I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. We're back again exploring TV's greatest turning points with Professor Robert J. Thompson right here on the TV Time Machine.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Contact light. Engine arm on.
We're home.
Man on the moon.
The Eagle has landed.
There he is. Yeah. There's a foot coming down the steps. Wow.
Oh, boy.
Boy.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Professor, what part did television play in America's effort to be the first nation to reach the moon?
Well, it, of course, becomes the greatest television series of all time. I was 9 years old when that happened, and that was still the most thrilling moment in front of a TV set that I had ever spent. One can talk forever about why we did this. In many ways, I think getting to the moon was a response to the fact that we'd lost the race to orbit, which the Soviet Union got first with Sputnik in 1957, and that this was a huge kind of Cold War public relations ploy to boost up the morale and the patriotism of the country during a very, very harsh Cold War. On the other hand, never has there been a human adventure quite like that one was. And what resulted in it happening when it did was that television was able to deliver this to everybody around the world. What Columbus did when he went out on his voyages, what all of these other adventurers did during the throughout the centuries were exciting, but never before was an adventure of that magnitude able to be delivered in that intimate way to all of the citizens that would eventually be affected by it. And that was really something very, very extraordinary.
And it was great for the morale of the country, considering the Vietnam War was raging at that point.
Sure it was. And it was great for, I mean, the technology that was developed as a result of it, the people who got turned on to the ideas of science and space and all the rest of it. It was really one of the central stories going on, aside from the other civil rights in Vietnam and all the rest of it that were happening at the time.
Early in 1971, Professor, CBS and Norman Lear introduced the nation to a beloved bigot by the name of Bunker.
Oh, yeah, now I see what your idea of a free country is. You're free to say anything you want, but if anyone disagrees with you, they're either thrown into jail or called a meathead, right?
That's right, because this is America, the land that I love.
Well, I love it too, Mr. Bunker, and it's because I do it, I protest when I think things are wrong.
And stand beside her.
And guide her.
The right to dissent is the principle upon which this country was based.
With the light from above.
Listen to me. It's in the Bill of Rights.
From the mountains.
Why do you think we broke away from England to begin with, huh? Because we didn't agree with them. We demanded freedom.
Liquid folks.
Gee, it's guys like you. It's guys like you who don't listen to reason. I mean, you're letting us in anything. You're totally closed-minded.
Hold on.
You're prejudiced. You're prejudiced.
Professor, how did All in the Family change television?
The single most influential entertainment program of all time. Overnight, the success of this show, and it ran 5 years in number one. That's only once been tied, and that's by The Cosby Show. Television, up till 1971, when All in the Family debuts, entertainment completely ignores, for the most part, what's going on in the real world and on the news at 11. With a couple of exceptions, Laugh-In and Julia and the Smothers Brothers, television treated, for example, the Marines in 1968 when they were dying in Vietnam. Gomer Pyle, USMC, was a number two rated show. All in the Family decides to take all of these issues that are coming to a boil, that are in fact boiling over in the culture, and to plow them into regular weekly entertainment television. And they were so successful in doing that that overnight every other program, every other network started doing it as well. And the era of modern television that we're in now to this day really starts on that January day in 1971 when All in the Family debuts. even little things like the fact that that Archie Bunker went to the bathroom often before he'd come down the stairs, you'd hear the toilet flush. I've often called that the flush heard round the world, because it was the first time you actually acknowledged that these people on TV were real human beings with real bodily functions. A very, very good program. It managed to deliver to the mass audience all of the change that had been happening over the past decade or so, and completely changed the nature of American TV.
Yeah, unlike the Brady Bunch, which in their bathroom, they didn't even have a toilet.
Exactly.
So I don't know how they manage that. I guess they use
a
sink.
The NAB code forbade you show a toilet bowl back then, which is why the Tidy Bowl Man floated in the tank.
Is that why? Okay.
That's why.
Okay. So I assume CBS was surprised by the phenomenon of All in the Family.
They were surprised by a lot of things. ABC had passed on that show. They didn't want anything of the controversy that it was going to cause, and CBS expected when they put that on that they were going to get an awful lot of complaints. They didn't get very many at all. It was the first show, however, ever to carry a disclaimer at the beginning that these were adult themes and that people should be cognizant of the fact that it may not be good for kids. That was the first time that had ever happened. It turned out that not only did they not get a lot of complaints, the audience watched it, made it a number one show. The critics loved it. It was an enormous hit across the board.
Well, another CBS series which helped change the social and political face of television was MASH. Although the series itself represented an important turning point, its ultimate evolution would not have taken place if not for the episode entitled Sometimes You Hear the Bullet.
It's the first time I cried since I came to this crummy place.
Well, Gillis was your friend.
I've watched guys die almost every day. Why didn't I ever cry for them?
Because you're a doctor.
The hell does that mean?
I don't know. If I had the answer, I'd be at the Mayo Clinic. Does this place look like the Mayo Clinic? Look, all I know is what they taught me at command school. There are certain rules about a war. And rule number one is young men die. And rule number two is doctors can't change rule number one.
Professor, with that one line, I believe the entire complexion of the series changed, because prior to that episode, MASH was mainly a slapstick comedy satirizing army life.
Yeah, that's a good point, and one that I don't hear many people pointing out. This show, if you look at the very early episodes, it's not a very good show. It reminds one more of things like Sergeant Bilko and Private Benjamin and those kinds of things. However, this program ended up being really a commentary, and even though it took place in Korea, it ended up being a commentary on war in general and on Vietnam in particular. It was part of a literary triptych that included The Mary Tyler Moore Show that starts in September of 70, All in the Family that starts later that season in January of 71, and then in 72, MASH. The three of them together really did usher us into this kind of golden age of television that the 80s would finally then pick up and complete.
Well, as the Vietnam War was winding down in the early 1970s, another war was being waged, this time on the domestic front. The greatest political scandal in nearly a century, this time played out on live television and in real time for all the world to see.
I told him that cash that had been at the White House had been funneled back to the re-election committee for the purpose of paying the seven individuals. I began by telling the president that there was a cancer growing on the presidency, and if the cancer was not removed, the president himself would be killed by it.
Professor, how did the Watergate scandal impact television at that time?
Well, it certainly helped deliver the Watergate story to an audience that might not necessarily have been reading about it in the newspapers. And what's interesting is that All in the Family comes out in 1971, and television finally gets to this point where it's going to start dealing with contemporary issues. Then we lose the Vietnam War. The Watergate scandal kind of breaks the back of American patriotism. This is a scandal at the highest levels. And to an extent, by the time everybody had sat through those Watergate hearings, had began to see what a stain on the presidency had happened, it set the stage for the late part of the 1970s, which was a reversal of the All in the Family movement, and that was total escapism. All in the Family finally gets knocked out of the number one position by none other than Happy Days, a show that's set in a time before Watergate, before Vietnam, before any of this stuff happened before. And we go into this period of Charlie's Angels, Three's Company, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, almost as though the Watergate hearings delivered this to so many people, and by the time they were all over, they were all ready to catch boogie fever, and that's exactly what happened in the end of the 70s.
So ultimately, the plumbers were responsible for Jiggle TV.
I don't think that would be a completely incorrect assumption.
And there's no question that Professor Robert J. Thompson gets an A+ from TV Time Machine University. Professor, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
This is Jim Benson. Join us again next time as our magical transport takes us on yet another journey exploring television's past, present, and future. You'll find your next adventure right here on the TV Time Machine. I hope you enjoyed today's trip on the TV Time Machine, now traveling on 1170 KCBQ. If today was your maiden voyage, here's a roadmap of what you can expect. I'm Jim Benson, TV historian and your pilot on the TV Time Machine. Join me and my guests as we explore TV-related topics from TV's past, hover in the present, and blast off into the future. We'll explore how TV has impacted society, discuss the effects of today's hottest shows, and envision where TV may be headed tomorrow. Along the way, we'll interview the legends from the TV universe, from the golden and silver ages of the networks to today's movers and shakers in cable and the internet, punctuated by insider info, fun facts, and the occasional nostalgia trip. All right here, every Saturday at 3 p.m. on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Find out more at www.tvtimemachine.com. But for now, here's a brief catalog of future travels on the TV Time Machine. See you next week. And we are very pleased to welcome our guest du jour, the actor who is probably best known for his classic role as the soup Nazi on Seinfeld, Larry Thomas.
Because of Michael Richards complaining, because he kept saying, you know, this isn't the kind of script that made this show what it is, and our show is going to lose all its credibility. And he didn't understand my character either. I could keep coming up to me and going, why is your character so mean? I don't get it.
We are proud to welcome legendary television writer and executive producer on Get Smart, Leonard Stern.
I'm sorry, Jim, but there are many confidential details that I can't simply divulge in public. I'll tell you in confidence, but I'll have to insist that we use the cone of silence.
All right. Ed, activate the cone of silence. Now, as I was saying about the genesis of Get Smart...
What?
I was talking about the genesis. Genesis!
I'm a genius. Oh, thank you very much. That's kind of you.
I'm Jim Benson, filling in for Jim Rockford's answering machine, and I'm running out of tape, so I have to say this real fast. Join us again next week on the TV...